Blog Talk Radio.
Dedicate our lives to this sport. We give, we do thousands of sit-ups in camp. We run hundreds of miles, you know, for the ones that take it serious. And we just dedicate ourselves fully to our craft, man. We watch tape. We you know, we attitude. We moody, and we go into that fight and to land on the line.
Fans, this is the Rope a Dope Radio Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Carlson. We are live on a Wednesday with a shortened type feel to it, okay? Definitely kind of life gets in the way sometimes. Been helping a couple of people, especially one person, a good friend of mine, with the flooding going on in his basement. So I've been a little bit busy, got to fit this show in. Had to kind of tweak my work schedule, come in a little bit earlier, yada, yada, yada. I'm sure you guys don't want to hear about it. But anyway, we are live. I'm your host, Chris Carlson. We are live on a Wednesday afternoon. And like I said, this one will be a shortened show. Okay, if this is your first time listening to the Rope It Up Radio Podcast, it streams live right here on blogtalkradio.com/ropeitupradio. You can find it on iTunes, Player FM, Stitcher, Spreaker, TuneIn, all over the place. You can also find it on the Grueling Truth Sports Podcast Network, which, you know, can be subscribed on iTunes and Player FM and Spreaker and a lot of names I just mentioned. You can also stream it on Spotify and iHeartRadio for the Grueling Truth Sports Podcast Network. It's boxing, it's football, it's basketball, it's baseball. It's everything in between. Head on over to thegruelingtruth.net. That's thegruelingtruth.net. You can listen to a podcast right there. You can read an article. I do a weekly predictions article for boxing and other sports. And while you're at it, you can place a book, or you can place a bookie. You can place a bet on mybookie.ag. That's where I got the bookie. Also, if you know, the household helper Siri and Alexa, through TuneIn, you can go right. And Spotify as well, you can find this show, Rope It Up Radio Podcast, right there. So obviously, we're going to have to start with some recap from what is one of the best, if not the best, fights under the radar for a fair amount of boxing fans, or at least, you know, certain boxing fans that claim they're the most hardcore, and they love to tweet a bunch of stuff. But for whatever reason, they don't like mid-level competitive fights. Funny. Then all of a sudden, I saw a lot of people saying, oh, when are they doing the replay? When are they doing the replay? Well, dude, DVR the shit. But understandably so, to an extent, because it's March Madness. So obviously, if you look at the ratings, you know, for the FS1 show and the ESPN, you know, below average, no doubt about it. But let's talk about the fight, Lipinets and Peterson. We'll also, you know, talk about the Pulev ESPN card, talk about some overseas stuff, talk about a fight that I believe happened in Mexico. So we'll talk about a variety of stuff when it comes to recap. We'll take a look at this weekend. The next two weekends are pretty damn mild. Now, ESPN does have a card. Voshtik returns. DAZN has a card. So we'll preview that schedule a little bit. Like I said, nothing too crazy happening, but we will, you know, take a gander at it at least. And you know, we got to get to some news. Tyson Fury, since the last time I did a show, has an opponent, kind of a strange opponent, but I suppose it's not that shocking. And we'll talk about what Bob Arum said recently about a Wilder and Fury rematch. It's not going to be this fall, folks. That's what he said. He's on this big smear campaign against, you know, Al Haymon and the PBC. Some people I see online are talking about how PBC now has people that are, you know, hired help to smear. And so we're going to, you know, kind of talk about that as well. A couple other items of news. The WBC made a couple of decisions. They're also, they need to make a decision on Mikey Garcia as well. Just a variety of other news. Vlad Klitschko is back in the news potentially. And also DAZN. DAZN doubled their monthly fees. Now, for hardcore fight fans that already had it, you're in the clear till not this May, but I believe next May. So that's cool. We'll talk about the one-time payment per year that actually drops the price. But also, if you're trying to get that common boxing fan, especially the casual, $15 over ESPN Plus, that's kind of, well, it's kind of interesting. Let's put it that way. Little interesting there. I don't know, you know, what to think of that. I mean, it's kind of crazy. But anyway, we'll talk about a variety of stuff here. And like I said, we'll definitely preview the weekend and whatnot, tweak something. The number to call is 646-381-4990. That's 646-381-4990. I see a handful of people coming in. I don't expect anybody to really call in too much or a lot of the people that generally are kind of the co-hosts. I don't necessarily think they'll call in because I just had to kind of do the show randomly. Didn't really talk to anybody about it. Also, Dan Raphael, finally one of the well, someone at ESPN, but also just in general, one of the big platforms put Bob Arum in his place to an extent, obviously. But let's just start with what happened in the ring. And it was a Sunday night. It was a three-hour card. They barely snuck into that three-hour window with the knockout. Technically, they went over, though. In fact, What podcast? I've heard this on a couple of podcasts now about the time slot for boxing, but especially for PBC and Fox and FS1. And they're saying that they need to fit the whole thing in at 2 hours, but they can't because there's a triple header. But it's like, dude, I believe in the initial announcement, they said both the FS1s and the Fox are going to be triple headers. So just because it's a two-hour slot, I mean, it's 2019. Like, all you got to do is add the extra DVR time. Or if you're on a streaming cable service, you just record the next show and maybe a little bit of the other one. I don't understand. So they're giving you three fights and you're going to complain about it? I actually heard it on a podcast that I listen to all the time from a UK host. But then I heard it a couple other places, too, and it's like, it's just kind of weird. It's just weird to me to complain about, I guess, to complain about it over and over again. Like, I've heard some of the same people over and over say, why can't they get these three fights in this two-hour slot? It's like, dude, it's not going to be a two-hour slot, obviously, so why don't you just record it? And a lot of people are like, well, for the people that recorded this, they're going to be pissed. A lot of the people already know who DVR. If you're going out of your way to DVR something, or you've, you know, maybe that you haven't, but your search engine to, you know, anything boxing related, you have it DVR'd automatically, there's a good chance you know that it might go over. So I saw that in a variety of places and on Twitter, and it kind of made me scratch my head. It's like, really, guys? Like, you're going to complain about three fights being over? But they did go, you know, I think 3 hours is long enough. Sometimes, a lot of times on Fox, FS1, and on ESPN2, 3 hours is enough. I know people love to watch a live stream for 7 hours. There's so many fights that don't do much for me or anything. There's just nothing to them that I think once you hit the three-hour mark, that's enough. But as far as the fight goes, this was a good fight. On paper, it was basically a 50-50 fight. How would Lipinets, you know, react to the welterweight division? Is Lamont Peterson a little shop-worn, especially in the second half? That's kind of what I called for the prediction. I did predict majority decision for Lamont Peterson, but I also mentioned the second half of this fight should be fairly telling. I thought Peterson got off to a good start. I thought he won the first couple of rounds. He had the jab going. He had, you know, right hands. His defense and movement was really nice. Nice short right hands. Couple of uppercuts as well. But Lipinets, you know, he had a good start to a lot of these rounds too. It's not like he was out of the rounds by any stretch. He was landing really good uppercuts along with his jab. But yeah, really the clean right hands and the jab and just that subtle movement, I'd say kind of won the first three rounds. Although the third round was really close, that could have went either way. I gave Lipinets the fourth. He started finding a home for that right hand and those left hooks, but especially that right hand, dude. And the way he kind of just pops it in there. Sometimes it's looping or overhand. Other times it's real short. It's on the inside, and it's effective. But then, you know, the fifth round was a fun-ass round. This whole fight was really fun to watch. But I thought the right hands to the head and then the left was enough for Peterson to get the fifth round. There was an error. There was a timekeeper error, like 30 or 40 seconds. And I kind of felt like, wait a second, that round's done? And they went to a commercial, and they restarted the round, so they went back from the commercial and finished it off. It was really strange. You know, Barry Hunter made a big stink of it, which, of course, he should. That was you see it every once in a while, but that was, I think, 40 seconds or 30 seconds. That was crazy. But still, the short right and left hooks by Lipinets were enough to score. I just thought he won the fifth. Peterson, you know, the sixth round was really close. I just thought Peterson was landing the better shots, but both guys were starting to really duke it out. And this fight went into a phone booth, like the old timers love to say, that this was on the inside the rest of the fight, pretty much. Just back and forth action. But on the inside, you could see Lipinets started landing the heavier shots, especially in the seventh and the eighth round. Close round, but he landed a huge right hand. And Peterson was definitely hurt in that eighth round. Good start for Peterson in the ninth, but then Lipinets took over and, you know, just started landing the harder punch down the stretch. Tenth round, it was a left hand. I think it was a left uppercut and a right hand. That stumbled and bumbled Peterson across, like halfway across the ring. And he almost turned his back. And when he hit the rope, he kind of turned sideways, but it was kind of like, oh, dude, I don't know if you're ready to fight. And he got caught with the right hand. So Peterson kind of went into, okay, dude, I'm hurt. I'm going to just kind of laterally skip. You know how fighters do that just to get away? Well, he was doing that. And then a perfectly timed shot by Lipinets kind of lifted him off the canvas a little bit. And then another one, and he went down, and Barry Hunter had seen enough. He threw in the towel. It was a good decision. And they kind of had a moment of embrace right in the middle of the ring. And obviously there on live television, that's where it went over the 3-hour slot, actually. Where he announced his, you know, he announced his retirement, and it was a hell of a fight. It was a hell of a fight and a big win for Lipinets. A lot of people, you know, Peterson's retirement kind of stole the story a little bit, but he was looking really good in a lot of that fight. He just got caught with some punches that he couldn't recoup. And you could see pretty much the seventh, eighth, ninth round on that the fight had completely turned. I barely had Peterson up, but it was close. Through nine rounds, 5-4. I could see 4-4-1 for either guy. It was close. But I did have Peterson up a little bit. But obviously that would have changed even if he would have survived. But the punch stats, man, 303 to 264 landed in not even 10 rounds just yet. And 972 for Peterson thrown, 31% landing, and 286, so almost 1,000 apiece at 27% for Lipinets. The body work that Peterson was putting in was pretty strong, 94 to 38. No secret there, though. That's, you know, that's his bread and butter. Obviously, you know, we'll never know if Peterson could have won this fight if he would have just boxed a little smarter. You know, you never know. You never know. But you could say that about his career. And when he did box smarter, especially the night against Danny Garcia, he made the mistake of not throwing enough then. So he fought smarter, but not necessarily wiser, if that makes sense to you. He just didn't throw enough, especially when you're fighting in Brooklyn, Danny's backyard. So, you know, really big props, big props, big ups, kudos. I don't know why I said big props. Props go out, shots go out, whatever you want to say, whatever the kids are saying a decade ago. But anyway, really, really good fight. And like I said, I'm pretty sure that this is the best fight of the year for myself that I've seen. I'm pretty sure it's the best fight. It was very competitive, really fun to watch, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. I mean, whenever you get that many punches landed in 10 rounds, you're going to have some fun as a boxing fan, right? But overall, it was just there was craftiness, there was, you know, roughhousing. There was a little bit, not to say it was a dirty fight by any stretch, but, it was really good. It was a really good fight. Jermonte Clark also won in a pretty entertaining fight. Good little scrap, competitive fight on the undercard in Anthony Peterson and Mendez. I think it was Mendez, right? Yeah. They fought to a draw. I only saw bits and pieces of that one. I didn't see it from front to back. But, you know, where does Lipinets go from here? I mean, obviously Peterson's retired, but Lipinets, you know, I think he's a valuable second-tier guy at that welterweight division, whether it's, you know, I'd like to see if Danny Garcia gets by Adrian Granados, which he should. Okay, with that fight right there, I think that would be a good fight. It'd be an interesting fight, but Lipinets is definitely game, you know, for anybody on the come up or coming off maybe a loss. You know, maybe if Porter fights, Spence, he can get that fight. If Porter were to lose, then maybe that'd be a bounce back fight and be a difficult fight. Another one is locally here in Minneapolis, Jamal James. That would be a really fun fight to watch. And James could do some stuff on the outside with that reach that could trouble Lipinets. But we know that right hand is pretty damn powerful. And we've seen Jamal caught as well with some shots. So not just punched in the face, but caught and hurt. So I think that would be good. And obviously we know if that's a summer fight sometime, maybe late summer, because Lipinets did just kind of go to war here. maybe in August or something like that. That'd be a good little fight, man. And that, you know, that would draw a good crowd in the Armory as well. But yeah, so that about wraps that up. Just going to kind of breeze through some of this. Now, obviously the ESPN card, with Kubrat Pulev and, Dainu, yeah, I think that's what it is. And, Dainu, for what he is, he's a guy that a lot of people on the hardcore level may know. Nah, I shouldn't say a lot of people, but the only way you know him is probably him just recently getting knocked out. But he put up a decent fight considering he got knocked out by Big Baby Miller. And, you know, when I first saw this fight, I was like, okay, I get it. They're trying to put Pulev and Tyson Fury in the ring later this year. So I understand, you know, it was the Tyson Fury show in the Kubrick, you know, Pulev show. And so he pretty much won the first round, mostly jabbing, the second and third jabbing and you know, land. He was coming He was coming to him and landed some decent shots. And so it looked like he was trying to take care of business fairly early. He knew what he was in there with. And, you know, at the hangar, the venue, it actually was kind of a boisterous crowd. It was an energetic crowd. It wasn't a huge crowd by any stretch, but sometimes just that noise, that energy is good enough. It doesn't always have to be 8 or 10 or 12,000 people. Sometimes if it's 1,500 or 2,500 or whatever, it could be a really good crowd. So he was doing just fine. He did get cut really, really bad. I think in the fourth round, like bad, his left eye. and Danu actually went on a flurry after that. He landed a really good right hand. And he actually got to the point, he went so hard for it, I guess he saw the blood and had a little extra time because of the break. He actually punched himself out. In the fifth round, Pulev bounced back, kind of a state, you know, get right, you know, what the hell just happened in the fifth round, even fourth and fifth, but especially the fifth. So he kind of bounced back. He was the busier one, Pulev. But by the sixth round, he was taking over the fight again. He never really lost all control of the fight, but he had some rough moments, especially with that cut. But chopping shots caused the knockdown, and it was really strange because it was a legit knockdown, but he hit him when he was clearly down. And Andre Ward, and I don't know if Andre Ward was just trying to be on the side of a bad foul to try to be like, this stuff happened, you know, because of the Kovalev thing. And I don't think that – I think Kovalev got knocked out that day. I think he did some stuff. I think both of them did some stuff in that fight. But I think Kovalev got knocked out. It wasn't from – he wasn't hurt just because he got hit low. He was hurt to the body, to the head, and by the way, he got hit low. But either way, what Ward was saying – you know, Ward – In the HBO telecast, I really liked him because he balanced it out. And obviously the fighter perspective, I did like him. Not that I don't like him now, but he's trying to be more of a lead guy. And to me, I don't know. I don't know if I like him in that role as much, but it seems like that's what they're asking him to do. But it was a blatant fall. I mean, the guy, like, you don't know, he even said, like, you don't know if he's ducking down and he's going to land the punch, but you clearly saw he was down, all the way down, almost on his knees, and his head was down on, not on the mat, but facing downward. So the whole, you don't know if he's going to duck up and land a punch, are you kidding me? Like, you hit him in the back of the head when he was already down. It could have been a disqualification, but either way, another overhand right for the second knockdown. I think on the third, Danu messed up his knee a little bit. You could see it kind of bent a little weird, and he was kind of favoring it. Not that he would have won the fight or anything like that. But Pulev, you know, in an exciting fight, it was there to be knocked out. That was what the opponent was there for. And not to say that Danu didn't try. I'm not saying that. But, you know, it was scheduled like that. This was a showcase fight. And Jesse Magdaleno, by the way, picked up a pretty easy win. Pretty uneventful against Rico Ramos. He looked okay. He's been off for about a year. Magdaleno, funny. Haven't heard, you know, the crowd going nuts. Even when you get an injury and you're gone for a while, the PBC guys get a bunch of shit. But I hadn't heard too much about Magdaleno being a year off, and you know, there's legitimate reasons a lot of times for these layoffs, whether it's their choice or injury, like I said, or whatever. But he didn't really look that good. You know, he was winning that dogbone fight, then got knocked out. Ramos is just a veteran guy, and we'll see. You know, I'd like to see Magdaleno now that he's got some rust off and see where he's at. But as far as, like, the way they were selling, you know, it obviously Pulev is going to be an opponent in the fall for Fury. I think that's pretty obvious. But to me, the way they were trying to sell his opponent, we'll just talk about that. June 15th, ESPN Plus, unless they change it. I believe it's ESPN Plus. At the Thomas and Mack Center in Las Vegas, Fury is taking on Tom Schwarz. Not even Schwartz, Schwarz. He's a German fighter, and he's undefeated, 24-0 with I think 18 KOs or 16 KOs. I don't exactly remember, but you know, this guy's just there. You know, he's just there. He's got an unbeaten record, so if a casual fan happens to swing by ESPN Plus and watch it because, you know, maybe they like Tyson Fury, obviously, or they saw, you know, a segment on SportsCenter or whatever the reason, you know, it's going to be. They see 24-0. They see a big dude. He's a little out of shape. I thought they didn't do him any favors when he was kind of hunched over. I don't know if you guys see that, but, you know, there's a screenshot of the guy. There's a picture, his image. And they had him where he was kind of bent over. They just didn't put him in a good light. You know, you could see the rolls and stuff like that. And I just think you could have had it a picture where maybe he's just punching and the rolls aren't so exposed. But, yeah, it's they were just saying this guy is the number two guy. And, you know, you just never know what can happen. And it's true. He's 6'5 and a half. Wilder's 6'5. He's got a big right hand. Wilder's got a – that whole Timothy Bradley thing was just ridiculous, dude. Oh, my God. Throwing money around. That was just funny and ridiculous and stupid, but not funny. It was corny funny. But here's my thing. I'm not a big box rec guy for rankings, but every once in a while I kind of just take a gander of how they got people ranked. And this guy right here, there's 79 enrolled on Boxing Scene, officially professional fighters at heavyweight in Germany, 79 of them. According to BoxRec, and I'm not saying it's some perfectly ranked system. I'm not saying that at all. Their pound-for-pound list can be a joke at times, whatever. But he's the fifth. They have him ranked as the fifth best German heavyweight. Now, I'm not saying there's not some German heavyweights out there, but the fifth best German heavyweight, it just, I don't know, man. You know, and you can look at, he's fought mostly in Germany. You know, he has beaten some guys that were unbeaten. You know, a couple of those guys that were 11-0 and 16-0 and 9-0. But when you go and check the record, though, of those guys, you say, well, who's he beaten? I don't know. All I know is if Wilder was fighting this guy, oh, my God, or Joshua, they'd be destroying this guy. But like I said, on fight night, this guy's probably going to come to Fury, and it's going to be a pretty damn good showcase for Fury. It's basically just an infomercial, that type of showcase, you know what I mean? And it's just to kind of make him look really good and then probably fight Pulev. And we'll get to some of that stuff a little later. It was pretty corny. It was pretty corny broadcast, I'll say that at times. It was just like, really, dude, what is going on right now? So all in all, though, it actually did – it was entertaining. You know, that Pulev fight was entertaining while it lasted. Like I said, both the FS1 and the ESPN, the cards' ratings were down. No surprise that ever since ESPN and FS1 kind of been going head-to-head, or Fox in general with this new deals, I think people are a little knee-jerky when it comes to the ratings. I think if you look at – we'll talk about that in a second. Just real quick, though. I'm not going to really – well, actually, you might as well finish it off. So the average last year for PBC on FS1 was 220. So it was lower than – it was about 100,000 lower than what we got in the last year or two on Friday Night Fights, which is ESPN2, by the way. And you can see the difference from a fight that's shown, no matter what kind of fight, a fight that's shown on ESPN and ESPN2. And FS1 and ESPN2 should be compared more on the same level because of branding. A lot of people are going to look at the amount of homes they're in, but it's really branding. And ESPN, as we know, has been branded for quite some time. But, you know, when you're going head up against March Madness and Zion is playing, and you know, and it's especially the FS1 card on a Sunday. So you've gone through Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. It's just kind of fatigue after a while. And I'm sure a lot of people DVR'd it. I know the surfers were pissed off. But maybe they watched a good fight, the surfers, because you know how the last hour of the show was supposed to be some competition for surfing. But the PBC averaged 220 last year. per card. And the year before, it was 200. So this is their lowest card so far, but it doesn't surprise me. The three-hour card, I guess you could say technically over three-hour card, whatever. It averaged, what was it, 230 or something like that? I can't remember. 249. It averaged 249. The card itself peaked over, well over 300,000. But no, I'm sorry. It was right up on 300,000. My fault. Right up on 300,000. And, you know, once you're in the 300,000 range, then you're on that Showbox in ESPN2 Friday Night Fight range. At least, you know, the last chunk of Friday Night Fights. Not Friday Night Fights average for all the years they did. You know, nothing like that. But, so, yeah, I think it peaked at like 360 if you include Fox Deportes. So that's not the biggest surprise because of what they're going head up against. 469, I believe, is the lowest or second lowest card that they've had on a Friday or Saturday, not like a morning thing or something like that for Horn or something like that. So both of them struggled, but dude, you know, on Saturday and Sunday, you're getting these games are tight, a lot of them, and they're, you know, you have upsets. It's that's why they call it March Madness. That's why the next 2 weekends there's not going to be a whole lot going on. You know what I mean? So on FS1, college basketball, which is Big Ten and Big East mostly, averaged 269, and those are about 2 hour windows, whereas the FS1 is usually a 3 hour window, and the longer the broadcast is on, the lower the average is going to go down. Now, you also can help yourself by peaking, but I think on a Sunday night at a 10:30 in the main event time, 10:30 on the East Coast, that's probably a little too late. You know what I mean? Actually, it was more like 11 on the East, wasn't it? I can't remember. Did the start cut at 7 or 8 for Central Time? Anyway, I think people are just a little knee-jerky. This was going to be low. Both cards were going to be low, but still, I mean, the one thing I'll say, ESPN does replay the card once, and then once in a while they'll replay it again. But FS1 will replay the crap out of this. So whether it's picking up, you know, 80,000 on the rerun, and then the next one goes 40,000, the next one does 15, after a while, it does add up to, you know, so more people are going to see this fight than you think. But let's move on from that stuff, because that stuff gets old. Andrew Selby and Julio Cesar Martinez from Azteca, Boxeo Azteca, or Box Azteca. I watched that fight. Andrew Selby was boxing pretty well. There was some pretty good action by both guys, but the left hooks and right hands kind of jabbing and pot shotting in the first couple of rounds. You know, Martinez would flurry from time to time, but he wasn't doing a whole lot. He did get fouled, the point deducted. Or he got some fouls, I should say. I think it was the third round that he got a point deducted. That was a close round. And even in the fourth round, Selby was boxing nicely on the outside. But left hooks early, I think 35 seconds into the fifth round, body shot hurt him really, really bad. I think it was a left to the body. Late in the fourth round, that actually hurt. That was kind of the beginning and the end to Selby, but Martinez took to the body. It was just too much. It was too much for him. He was winning the fight, but we're only five rounds into it at that point. So a nice win by Martinez. Decent little fight, though. Also, Sam from the UK on ESPN Plus, Jordan McCrory, I think, and Sam Bowen. This was a decent fight. It was a pretty good fight. Kind of back and forth. Definitely had a stoppage ending to it. I thought McCrory actually started out pretty well in the first round. He was kind of going in and out and landing good shots, but then it was tough to give him many rounds after that. Bowen, kind of, who's 14-0 with 10 KOs heading into this fight, I gave him rounds 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Yeah, I mean, I basically gave him every round after that. There was two way parts of the rounds, don't get me wrong. But to me, McCrory, by the mid rounds, Jordan McCrory was just arm punching a lot. And his defense, his leaky defense, was definitely a problem. A left hand to the body, then several uppercuts to the head and body. It wasn't a knockdown, but Bowen was really doing some damage, and McCrory actually got a point deducted for a low blow. He did rally some in that one to finish off the round. Was just wearing him down, wearing McCrory down, landing flush. Another point deducted in the seventh round. Now, the eighth round had some back and forth. Nice right hand by McCrory, but I'd still say that could have been a round that maybe Bowen didn't win, but he probably still landed the better shots. Some early uppercuts in the ninth round. It was done. It was done. You saw McCrory. It was a weird stoppage. The ref kind of just said, "We're good, we're done," because he was ducking down, and he wasn't. He was kind of not necessarily, you know, he was showing signs of him not wanting to fight, and it was kind of like stalemate at that point. It was like, "All right, dude." To me, the ref was just kind of like, "You know what? You're not going to win this fight. We're done here. You know, sorry. You need to do better and show me more." I think that's kind of the vibe I got from him. Sorry, just getting a little water here. That's about it. That was about it. The ref just kind of went in there and TKO'd it. As far as what else was there, I think, Charlie Edwards won an easy decision over Moreno, the flyweight WBC flyweight, I believe. UD, really easy. Saw a chunk of that. Didn't see the whole fight. Oh, and then there was a kind of a crazy knockout the last seconds of the fight, I believe, or was it the round? I think it was the fight. Maxwell, this was over in the UK. Maxwell was hurt. He was hurt pretty bad. This Sadiri, I think, is Sadiri? Sadiri? He started showboat, started hot dogging, and started messing around, started clowning. And Maxwell, although he was hurt, said, "Screw it, man." And in the closing moments, the closing seconds of this fight, Sadiri just got plastered. I'm talking plastered to the canvas, dude. It was pretty bad, dude. But hey, that's what you get, man. Sometimes you clown. So Maxwell, you were hurt, but hey, man. Kudos to you for getting that done. You know what I'm saying? So that about wraps up recap from the weekend. For this weekend, tomorrow there's a UFC Fight Pass. That's that Roy Jones stuff from San Antonio. You might want to take a gander if you have that. I don't. We'll see. ESPN and ESPN Deportes is in Philadelphia. You know, that'll be a good crowd. Some interesting, you know, matchups. Potentially a welterweight fight, actually two welterweight fights on the undercard. But in the main event, Volshtik takes on Dudu. Remember Dudu a handful of years ago fought Fanfara? And this is, I think it was like 2014. And remember, closed the fall of 2014 for Showtime, and then 2015 as well, was basically, most of it was just filler. And a lot of people were clowning this fight because, you know, it's Fanfara against a fighter not many people knew, and his first name was Dudu. So it's like, well, this is a fitting name for a fitting fight, that type of thing. But Dudu did actually give Fanfara a good fight that night. I'm hoping he can do the same with Volshtik. But it is what it is, pretty much a showcase. But who knows? Maybe, Volshtik coming off that big Stevenson win. So they're trying to line him up for some big fights. Kavalauskas, he's fighting Ray Robinson, Ray Robinson is I'm not necessarily going to call him the most sturdy guy, but he's just a guy that's going to be there that can at least give you rounds and you know, you spot a fair amount of guys, so you can at least measuring stick them. There is an IBF welterweight eliminator, and obviously the IBF is Spence. And I forgot how to say this guy's name. Abdukarahov. I can't remember how to say his name, but he's taking on Obara. That could be a good fight. That's a 12-round fight. I wonder if that's the telecast, though, or if that'll be ESPN Plus. I wonder, because that'd be two 12-round, scheduled 12-round fights and a 10-rounder. So anyway, the Mean Machine is the co-feature. That's what I think it is, and I think that IBF welterweight eliminator, I believe that'll be on ESPN Plus on the undercard, the prelims, basically. Frederick Lawson also it returns, yada, yada, yada. DAZN has a fight from Liverpool, which could be interesting. Liam Smith and Sam Eggington. I favor Liam Smith in this one pretty cleanly, but Eggington, you know, who knows? Maybe he's so inconsistent. He's really not that great of a fighter, but he'll kind of come up every once in a while and do good. I think Liam Smith is going to handle business here. It's a big fight over in the UK here. Anthony Fowler and Scott Fitzgerald. Fowler is a prospect on the rise. And, you know, he's a 154-pounder, I believe. Yeah, junior middleweight. Fitzgerald, you know, this is a fight that has kind of a little rivalry there. I have seen and heard people talk about it. My guess is if Fowler's, you know, as real deal as people say he is, he should handle business here. So this will be like a nice little profile kind of rivalry thing over there. So, you know, keep an eye out for that. That's on DAZN. And DAZN as well, Ryan Garcia from Indio, California, going against Jose Lopez. So we'll see, you know, how he looks. He looked good in his last fight. But the two before it, I think they're going to keep him moving him laterally for a little bit based off those last two fights. Not the last fight, the two before, the second and third last fights, I should say. Not that he looked horrible by any stretch or, oh, my God, he's got all these flaws, but he just didn't look that great, and his power didn't look that great. There is Acosta, Angel Acosta is taking on Lopez. A different Lopez for his for Acosta's WBO junior flyweight. Eduardo Hernandez is actually fighting as well against a guy I don't think I've seen. Joette Gonzalez against Rodrigo Guerrero. Who knows? That might be good. Ooh, Antonio Rosa. He returns from his loss. Maybe he's had a win already, but he lost to Ramirez a while back. He's taking on Jose Rodriguez. So not a lot of these fights stand out as some big, big fights. There is a Showbox next weekend. ESPN Plus has a card, but it's going to be on the lighter side, obviously. You know what I mean? Because of the time of year. This is March Madness. It takes over. It takes all the way over. It'll be interesting to see what the lead-in will be for ESPN. They had wrestling, college wrestling on, and that actually got a better overall in the window anyway, got a better overall rating than the boxing, which was a little strange. But I suppose that's like the biggest thing. Well, I guess it's not really that strange because that's the biggest thing for wrestling for college at the time. So it is what it is. Anyway, that about wraps up the preview. Like I said, pretty mild. Takes, you know, next couple of weeks, pretty mild. Then we start to pick up the pace. And by the end of April, guys, by the mid-April, there's some really good fights. But by the end of April, it's going to start to peak here. And then DAZN actually shows up. So we just got to make it through these next couple of weeks. You know what I mean? It's March Madness. What are you going to do? Couple of news and notes before I get a little bit more detail. Bob Arum was talking about Wilder Fury. We'll get to that in just a second. So a couple of things that were pretty much understood. The WBC ruled on Benavidez and Durrell. There's already an agreement in place. Sounds like they're going to have to wait till October or August or September because Durrell did get that bad cut against Yildirim. And Yildirim put in his, you know, he put in an appeal. He felt like he won the fight. But the WBC still ruled what they were planning on doing. However, they did hook up Yildirim with the winner. So whoever wins Benavidez and Durrell, and obviously most people think David Benavidez will win that fight in April or September. I think he's going to be on the undercard, like a stay busy fight. But whoever wins that fight, like I said, most people think Benavidez, he'll take on Yildirim. So that's a good fight for him. You know, Yildirim, you know, had that knockout loss to Eubank, but and you know, it was a, what, three rounds? He actually did land some good punches in that, but to me, he showed his worth a little bit more in other fights, especially his last fight. So I think that's a decent little fight for Benavidez after he beats Durrell, kind of a way to just kind of close the year and build to some bigger fights next year. Devin Haney, you know, the WBC is going to talk to Mikey Garcia this week for the lightweight WBC and see what he's thinking. We all knew that there was a chance, a slight chance, but we don't know, but maybe Mikey Garcia could go back to lightweight, but maybe not. You know, maybe he'll settle in at 140 for a while. Maybe he'll get another big fight, you know, against Danny Garcia. You never know. But they're going to talk this week about his status as the WBC champ. And there's a handful of people lingering around. Teofimo Lopez, Devin Haney. We've heard Eddie Hearn mention Devin Haney against Luke Campbell. That'd be a good title shot there for both of them, but especially Haney. You know, that's Campbell's a pretty solid operator, I'd say. So, yeah. The WBC kind of figuring that out. There is a rumor, you know, we heard about Vlad Klitschko getting these major offers from DAZN a while back, and it sounded like he maybe had thought about it, but just pulled the trigger. Now we're starting to see some rumors on boxing Twitter, nothing official or anything like that, but supposedly he's mulling over a $60 million offer for DAZN. And the rumor is Wilder in DAZN, but I really don't – that doesn't really add up per se unless that's going to be part of a new offer. I don't know. We'll see, though. Maybe they're trying to get that rematch with Joshua and him. And you know, since that was such a good fight, get Klitschko a fight and then have the fight later. I have no clue. But that's just a rumor that I see – you know, a lot here lately. Not a lot, but just today, actually, or last night, actually. So a couple of months ago, you know, basically coming out of January, heading into February, it seemed like Thurman and Pacquiao were going to fight. They fought in the same month. Thurman looked really good, except when he didn't in the seventh round and got hurt really bad, probably the worst he's ever been. I thought he was going to get knocked out. I thought Jose Cito Lopez was going to knock him out. Didn't happen, but that was like a strong feeling. Pacquiao, Thurman, and the fact that Thurman has been out, a lot of people don't think he's the same. So a lot of people all of a sudden said, hey, I like that fight. That's a good fight, and that's a fight they're willing to pay to see Pacquiao fight somebody. And then Manny showed up. You know, he didn't show up in Brooklyn to watch Thurman Lopez, but he showed up to Cowboy Stadium. And as it turns out, he was really trying to see if Mikey, how good Mikey was going to look. That's what it seems like. Because obviously Pacquiao did look a little, we talked about this, and actually 310 Mark was talking about this as well, how are they really going to, does Manny really want that fight? You know, it's like, well, he was there. And it is a big money fight for him, you know, for money fights nowadays anyway, money opponents, because Spence is growing now. But obviously he thought the differ of that. And he put out a poll, man, he did, with a bunch of names on it. Who should I fight next? Should I fight Sean Porter? Should I fight Thurman? Should I fight Mike or Danny Garcia? But he had no sense on it. So that kind of tells you where it's at. It's understandable, dude. You know, a lot of people are saying, oh, he's ducking Spence. I don't look like that. I don't look at it as a duck right now. I just don't. I mean, he's fought so many dudes at 40, he can fight whoever the hell he wants. And if it's Thurman, that's still a really good challenge. Because, like I said, not long ago, a year or two ago, well, probably 2 years because when Thurman was active, a lot of people would think Thurman would just outbox Pacquiao. And he's fully capable of doing that. I think people are kind of now really underestimating Thurman. But that's what it sounds like. And it's moving forward now based on Sean Porter's recent comments that he's already agreed, not agreed in terms, but he's already said yes to the fight. He's willing to go to Dallas, and he wants to fight this summer. So it does seem like Spence and Porter is next, which is a unification. It's a good style fight. It's a good fight. I wouldn't complain about it. I mean, it's a good fight. And to have Pacquiao and Thurman, that's a good fight too. So we'll keep you posted. But that's what it kind of seems like. Now, there was some other news that came out a handful of days ago. DAZN doubled the monthly rate from 10 to 20. It's basically $9.99 to $19.99. At the end of the day, it's 20 bucks. Which is a little bit of a shocker. Now, they treated, you know, for the next year or an upfront $100, they treated the hardcores that are already there well because they said, hey, you got a next, you know, you got $9.99 a month for the next year. So luckily they didn't just change it before April. For the people that are already there, that would have sucked. That would have been like, really, dude? That's weak, you know? Because it just doesn't make sense that way. Especially when you've been toting this price. You've been touting, I mean, tote. You have been toting around a money bag. But, you know, you talk about $10, and then all of a sudden it's $20, and you're not even a year into your business. In the States, anyway. So, it kind of threw me off. But as far, from a hardcore perspective, this is what you got to know. First of all, you're getting charged $9.99 till next May, I believe, which is cool. And then it goes up to $20 for everybody. However, you could pay $100 for the year, and that averages out to be less than $9. So it's actually, in the end, if you're a hardcore fight fan and you already have DAZN, you're not getting screwed. You just got to come up with $100 in a year. And you'll be good to go. However, you know, obviously putting out all this money, they had to raise the price to try to recruit somewhat. And the way they explained it, Eddie Hearn and others, they kind of pointed to like, well, for the people that just want to go in and out and they don't want to subscribe on a monthly basis, they just want to go in and out, we're raising it to try to keep those people, try to get a better profit off those people if you're just going to go in and out. And I can understand that, but you know, you also sold it to us that we don't have to have a yearly subscription. And I'm not talking about the $100 thing. I'm just talking about we don't have to have a contract month to month. You sold the public, the boxing public on, you know, you can just jump in and jump out. If you like those fights that weekend, pay $10. And this would be $20, whatever. And that's not the end of the world. But to pitch it to us like that and then to say, well, we changed the prices because basically we didn't like people going in and out. And it's like, well, dude, you came with this big, you know, press tour and, you know, a nice commercial run a little bit for Joshua, but especially for Canelo. But then the brakes were kind of hit hard. You know, we've been waiting till the end of April. So if you're wondering why people were going in and out of months, it's because the World Boxing Super Series has something to do with that. I'm not blaming that on DAZN, but you know, those were fights that were supposed to be in February or January, or at least March, and now they're not till, you know, April. So people are going in and out because your biggest event was Canelo against Rocky, and you just haven't really delivered too many competitive even fights. Now, some of these fights this year is kind of the mid-level fight. We have had an abundance of those, and we've had some surprises to Zone 2. They've had some entertaining cards. I'm not saying that, but for the common boxing fan, and especially the casual, to bump it up to 20 for the casual, because if a casual is going, okay, Canelo and Jacobs is fighting tonight, they're going to look at that $100 and be like, no, I'll just pay the 20. I'll just pay the 20. Now, are they still allowing a free month? I'm not sure about that. I'll get back to you on that. Because is it not a free month? Because that'd be like, okay, so now you're not giving a free trial? I guess my point is, when you're in direct competition with ESPN Plus and you're $15 more, it makes sense for Canelo and Jacobs and Canelo and Golovkin, but the common fan to be like, I'm paying 20 bucks for some fights that some of them entertain me. Some of these guys I know. Hey, I know Joshua. I know Canelo. Maybe a surprise fight on one of those undercards. Be like, oh, cool. But overall, it's kind of like, so you're about 5 or 6 months in to your U.S. launch. You're coming on. You're a month away from your best run of fights, and you raise it up 20 bucks to the common casual fan that doesn't know about you yet. To me, I just don't. It's telling. It's telling that their model of $9.99 paying out all this money was not going to work. And of course, the price was going to go up. But in 5 months or 6 months, something like that, I think it's 5 months or something like that, it just seems kind of weird. And like I said, to talk about people jumping in and out, and we're trying to stop that a little bit or get a little bit more revenue off that, I understand that. But like I said, you promoted it that way. And I've never had to pay 20 bucks for HBO. I never had to pay 20 bucks for Showtime, even if it's just a standalone streaming service and not like a bundle or a package in your cable deal. So we'll just see, man. We'll see what kind of summer they have. It'll be interesting to see. But that one surprised me a little bit. That I mean, not that the price went up, but to do it not even after a year, it's kind of surprised me a little bit. So back to that Fury stuff. So Bob Arum, just a couple news stories, and then we're going to be done here. Bob Arum is now claiming that the Wilder-Fury fight, remember how he wanted to have a fight, but then, you know, have them both fight on ESPN Plus, which they get the ESPN rollout, and then fight in the fall. That's what he wanted to do, right? And remember, that's what the whole, well, the five fights, man, the five fights, right? And it's a five-fight deal, but we're going to fight him in the fall. And that's why I was like, dude, if you don't have an exact date figured out, and it's not a guarantee that Tyson Fury is not next, then what's the point of signing a five-fight deal, you know? Because the big, big money was already matched. Like the Brazil, I think they went up to, what, 12 or 13 million for Brazil. Showtime already covered that. A lot of people think that Wilder's going to make $2 million on his next fight, and that's just not true. They actually covered it. Now, a lot of people said, well, because there were some reports from Coppinger and others that it was going to be on pay-per-view. So maybe it's not $13 or $12 million, but it's not $2 million either. But here's what – this is why not only you don't know if it's next, it's vague, just because he goes around – it talks to all the media saying it's next, we're going to have fights and then the rematch is next, doesn't mean it's actually next. And it was just a ploy to sign Wilder for a five-fight contract, which could be like a six-fight contract if he's got an option at the end of it. But this is why I said this. It's not because I hate Bob Arum. It just – this is any promoter talking about this. Just like Schaefer talking about, you know, it's going to do a million buys for Spence and Garcia because they, you know, the promotion was really good. That was nonsense. But he's now saying the Wilder and Fury rematch is going to be in 2020. So now they can fight it a couple times. So obviously he wants to match him with Pulev. Maybe Pulev will get another fight. Maybe not because of that cut. But he's a veteran. A lot of times veterans can go gap 6 and 8 months and just stay in the gym and be okay. But they're going to match Pulev in Fury in the fall. That's my guess. That's what I'd say. But maybe not. Or Oscar Rivas and Pulev in the winter fights Fury. That could. Or they could be maybe looking to get Pulev. I just think where Pulev is in the rankings and how he can be a mandatory, I think that would start to force belts and fights. So I think that's what they're doing too. If he beats Pulev, then Fury puts himself in position to become a mandatory where maybe that fight wouldn't happen, but he could at least strip Joshua. I don't know. But now Bob's saying that. He's literally saying it'll happen early 2020. So basically like a year from now. And so many people wanted to, you know, just believe him that it was going to be next, that this fight and then next. And it's like, dude, that's why you gotta sift through some of this stuff. And then, you know, he's been going around Aram and saying, you know, the cancer of boxing is one guy, Al Haymon, and that's it. But yet he says he wants to do all these deals with him. I doubt that that's the way to do deals. And I've been saying it for a while. Make the offer then, right to Al Haymon. Bob Arum, and kudos to Dan Raphael. There's times that I get on Dan. There's times where I give him props. This is the time where I give him props. Here's Bob Arum a couple of days ago on Twitter, which I think is pretty funny anyway. But Errol Spence, this is what he said. Errol Spence said he is ready to fight Terrence Crawford. We are ready to do that next. Once Bud is successful against Amir Khan on April 20th, it's the fight that fans want. Al should call you. Al, should I call you or will you call me? That's what he said. Which is like, dude, don't just do the boxing Twitter stuff. Like, save that for the boxers, dude. You don't have to be involved in this. But Dan Raphael said, one, Haymon isn't on Twitter. Two, fights aren't made on social media. They're made behind closed doors in private if both sides actually want to make them. Three, Top Rank has no opponents for Crawford to fight, hence the apparent desperation. Four, Bob knows 1, 2, and 3. Dan really let him have it. And then he put something else in there snarky, a snarky comment of saying, well, that fight won't happen either. I think he was talking about Wilder Fury. I'm not sure. But he really went at him. And maybe he feels a little burnt from, you know, over the time of you know, because I just gave him shit for a couple weeks ago going on Mannix podcast and talking about how he shouldn't have, you know, this deal. That Bob Arum is trying to make these fights. And, you know, but it's to try to make a fight. We can talk about the Loma fight. I see a lot of people online talking about the Loma fight and Garcia fight. And they almost act as if, you know, had Mikey just not gone up, that fight was made. And that's the farthest thing from the truth. Now, I'm not saying it could be made at that time, but to say, especially when Linares just knocked him down and he struggled at times, I know he's hurting that, but like, it's not a guarantee. It's not a guarantee that fight was going to be made. And I think he's just, not that he needs to wisen up because he knows Bob, but I like him going after him. And it's about time because people don't go after Bob Arum for all the shit he talks. And I'm not talking about just promoter jargon. That's expected. But when he says this stuff like we're trying to make the fights and the other guy isn't, but he hasn't sent an offer, that's just nonsense. Come on. That's just nonsense. So that was pretty cool, actually, that he put him in this place. But, you know, a lot of people, and even on ESPN during their broadcast, they said he turned down a $100 million deal, Wilder. And they keep repeating this stuff, and it's like, just like I said last week and the week before, he didn't turn down He didn't turn down a $100 million contract because the rematch, you can say he turned down $40 million for a fight because they're not going to pay him $40 million if they don't think Joshua's going to fight him. You know, I believe that part. But to say he turned down a $100 million deal, there's no guarantee that he fights Joshua in the rematch right after. We've gone over this. I'm not going to keep going over that part. But it's just, you keep hearing this stuff, and it just blows your mind. It's like, dude, he didn't turn down a $100 million fight because there is no $100 million deal. He turned down $20 million and $40 million. But he's getting a good chunk of change when it comes to Brazil. Because like I said, the first, I think it was 12, 12 and a half or 13 that ESPN, you know, offered for Brazil. And obviously 20 from DAZN. But they matched that. Showtime matched that. And, you know, you're talking about loyalty. And Espinoza's been talking about this too. This is actually from the presser a handful of days ago. Just to kind of listen to this stuff real quick. Then we'll get out of here.
Deontay won't say, but I will say for him. You know, it seems that over the last few months, everyone thinks they know what's best for Deontay. He should take this deal. He shouldn't take that deal. But there's really only one person in the entire world who has all the info, knows all the factors, knows all the consideration, who's in a position to make that decision. That's Deontay. And what people fail to appreciate, what they fail to take into account, is that Deontay knows what he wants and what's important to him. And one thing that he values very highly is independence. He's not beholden to anyone. He doesn't answer to anyone. He is an entrepreneur. He bets on himself like all the great champions have. Sugar Ray Leonard, Mike Tyson, Floyd Mayweather, they all bet on themselves. They all took control of their...
Make no mistake about it. It is a risk. It is a risk not to sign one of these deals for long-term money, especially the $40 million.
And, of course, with that comes criticism. When Floyd bought out his contract from Top Rank for $750,000, people thought he was crazy. When Mikey Garcia sat on the sidelines for 2.5 years to get his independence, people thought he was crazy. And there are certainly out there, there are people out there who think that Deontay is crazy and he's got his critics. But the reality is he's in charge of his career. He has demonstrated loyalty, but not the kind of loyalty that some of you think. There's not a choice between loyalty and financial success. Showtime would never expect loyalty at the expense of long-term financial success. So the reality is he's made a decision that demonstrates his loyalty and a decision which guarantees financial success for a long, long time. And he's not avoiding the big fights. Deontay isn't the one who walked away from the Tyson Fury rematch. He isn't the one who walked away from the Tyson Fury purse bid. He isn't the one imposing conditions on big fights. Can you guys imagine for a moment if Deontay said, anybody who fights me has to sign for 3 or 4 fights with Showtime and PBC? All of you would murder him for that. And yet, those are the conditions that are being imposed for him. So to the extent that he has decided that he is his own man, retaining his independence, he's going to retain control. That is something to be respected, admired, and celebrated, not criticized. I'm not going to go into detail, but rest assured that Deontay has made a choice that demonstrates both loyalty and will be financially lucrative for a long, long time. And regardless of what others may want to believe, Showtime has plenty of money. We're not going anywhere. We have been the home of the best boxing for quite some time. We've been the leader in the sport, and we're not going anywhere.
So anyway, I'm just trying to give you a different angle. He's not making $2 million on this fight, dude. He's not. Showtime, no. I mean, you really think Al's going to let him make $2 million on this Brazil fight? Or 3 or 4? Like, he's getting rewarded financially for this fight. Now, I still think probably he might have to take a 40. Well, it'll probably be more. That's what people don't understand. When they go back, when they, you know, after the summer fights, It's going to be another summer of this, by the way. But after they both win, probably, right, AJ and him, they are going to have negotiations, right? And it'll be interesting to see if Eddie Hearn actually allows Showtime to bid again. Because remember, he said we'd be willing because, you know, AJ's on a fight-by-fight, and that's why there's really no such thing as a guaranteed $100 million contract or 80, two fights, $80 million. That's not true. The $40 million, yes. I do think would it ultimately be maybe 42 or 45? Who knows? Maybe it'll be 50, the way DAZN throws it out. But the money, he'll get more money for the first fight if he fights on DAZN, more than likely, obviously, or he will. That's where he's going to have to do it. So I think he should take that fight, but I just don't think it should be tied with other fights, you know, down the line. And not only that, but like, the rematch, like I said, I'm going to say it one more time. The rematch, the $40 million rematch is not a guarantee. If he sparks him out, if Wilder sparks AJ out, you mean to tell me they're going to bring AJ right back to Wilder? So wonder if they don't. Then he takes a fight or a two fight or a year. Then what? Then you don't get the 40. They're not just going to hand you $40 million. It's just like Bob Arum said about that Tyson Fury deal when people were saying $80 million, five-fight $80 million, five-fight $100. He said, well, potentially, but if he's not fighting AJ or Wilder, they're not going to pay him $20 million a fight. All this does is get him some more, you know, a lot more exposure here, and the minimum, his minimum is large. You know what I mean? His minimum is large. So anyway, I just don't understand. People keep throwing this $100 million out there. It's not that it's not real, because I believe that DAZN would pay him $40 million, but the rematch is not contractually guaranteed. On the rematch, this is what we'll give you. But when is the rematch? Is Anthony on board? Does he have a contract that says he has to fight someone, then go, you know, within a year fight Wilder again? So you got to think about this. I do think that if they give him 42 or 45 or 50 million to fight AJ on DAZN, he should do it. And that would be a huge risk not to do it, because they're not going to give both of them 50. They're not going to put up $100 million for that fight on the first pay-per-view. And if they do, kudos to them. But that would be a huge risk. It was a big enough risk just to give 50, you know, to Joshua. But I think the fact that what can be generated just in the UK, especially on pay-per-view, just as an extra, you know, part there, I don't know. But it's this whole guarantee shit is bullshit. It's not true. It's just not true. Anyway, I'm going to get out of here. I'm just hitting my head on the wall at this point. But yeah, anyway, enjoy the fights this weekend. Let's hope on this mild weekend that we that has cards, DAZN has cards, ESPN has cards. Hopefully we get something that stands out from the crowd, whether it's a knockout, whether it's a two-way fight. Maybe Doo-Doo will show up against Voshtik. Anyway, I'm out of here. Enjoy the weekend. Peace.
Once you become the world champion, I believe that you feel you have the upper hand.